There won't be any deals, Lysnam told them. Verde glanced about nervously.
So, we run?
Idiot. Lysnam pulled out his wand. Illuso grande majesto. An image of him appearing 20 feet tall formed above the arena floor. Lysnam waved his hands, calling for quiet from the crowd. It took a couple minutes for the applause and the cheers to die down enough for the illusion's voice to be heard.
Your Royal Majesty, noble and honored guests, and good people, it is with a heavy heart and a shocked mind that I must tell you we have uncovered a terrible breach in the rules of the tournament.
Lysnam shook his head with great sadness.
I am disappointed to have to inform all of you that the white mage Waldo Rabbit cheated by using magic to influence the outcome of the final match. He made his servant faster and stronger than is humanly possible. Otherwise, she could never have defeated Varka. Therefore, the contestant Belle of Tarsus is disqualified. Varka is the winner of the tournament. All wagers placed on Varka shall be honored. That is all I have to say. Nunc.
The illusion vanished. The immediate reaction of the audience was stunned silence. But it was very quickly replaced by a loud and sustained chorus of boos, along with a growing chant of,
No!
Lysnam turned to face the other members of the guild. Past them he could see the queen with a confused look on her face. Garibaldi was already at her side explaining things. He could also see Valeria seated at her couch. If the drow witch was angry, she didn't show it.
What have you done? Verde demanded.
He was staring wide-eyed out at the crowd. They were beginning to throw things.
I did what I had to, the only thing to do.
Verde seemed even more nervous than before. The boos and shouts of no were only growing louder.
The people are angry.
Fuck the people. What do they matter? Let them shout and yell until their lungs burst.
Verde glanced back at their sovereign.
The queen won't be happy either.
Garibaldi will handle her. He knows how to sweet-talk that fat sow. If she actually tries to order me to change my decision, we'll have our little palace coup a few months early.
Lysnam made sure to keep his voice low as he said that.
This will ruin our reputation, Rodo argued. We always say we honor every bet. Everyone will say we disqualified her just to get out of paying our debts.
Then for once, the people will actually be right about something.
Our reputation, Rodo began.
We'll be damaged, yes, I know,
Lysnam said with mounting irritation.
We'll take down all the signs about honoring every bet, and I'm sure the gaming houses will suffer. It's still better than going bankrupt and losing everything. Even if Valeria were open to coming to some sort of an arrangement, she'd hold the title to every piece of property we own, even the guild hall. We could never pay off the debt. She would own us just as if we had collars. I will never let that happen. Do any of you have 1,000,000 marks to spare, do you?
They stared back at him in sullen silence.
Then stop complaining. So what if our names get a little mud on them? Mud washes off. A year from now, no one will even remember any of this. We'll have some new champion, and the crowds will cheer for him like they always do.
He looked to where a dumbfounded Waldo was standing.
Now come on. There's one more piece of business to take care of.
Darren had been cheering along with everyone else in his section of the arena. The master had spoken the truth, and the great rabbit had provided for his herd. He would go to the gaming house with his ticket and collect his winnings. In his entire life, he had never held a gold coin in his hand. Now, thanks to the master and his faith in the great rabbit, he was going to be a rich man. The idea he would soon have a purse full of gold or silver was hard to believe. Even more important, all his friends and fellow followers were saved. Even the ones who hadn't been able to scrape up enough to get rich from their winnings would at least survive the winter now. All the fears about going hungry and starving had been banished. For so many, that moment of triumph truly had seemed a miracle. Then the image of the guild mage appeared and announced that there would be no miracle. The righteous victory of Belle of Tarsus was denied. Instead, the dead man lying there on the sands of the arena was the winner. All the people who had risked everything were left with nothing. The heartless queen and the wicked guild mages who served her had condemned them all to death. Darren shouted and howled along with the rest. He screamed no and cursed them until his throat ached. It did no good. Darren looked at all the people seated with him. They were all followers. They were all in the same situation. They were all looking at him.
"Those who harm the great rabbit's herd shall know his justice."
Every head nodded.
"Let's go. We need to spread the word and gather the faithful."
Waldo was stunned. In a couple of minutes, he'd gone from total victory to total defeat. Why did he even bother trying to murder Belle if he could just disqualify her? Alice was a bit less calm.
"He can't do that."
The boos and protests began to rain down. "I have to assume he can, otherwise he would look pretty foolish making a public announcement."
"But Nan won."
"Belle won," Waldo reminded her.
"The point is, we won. How can he just say we didn't? It's not fair."
"You expect things to be fair?" Waldo asked in surprise.
"I expect people in charge to at least follow their own rules."
"Well, that's the wonderful thing about having power. You get to make and unmake the rules to suit you." Growing up in Castle, a corpse lover had taught him that.
"The Queen, she can fix this."
Waldo noted that Mattis was listening to Garibaldi and nodding her head as he spoke. Lysnam and his followers were also walking towards them.
"Somehow I don't think she will, Alice."
Lysnam walked up to Waldo as the others stood behind him.
"I know what you did. The Drow are specifically forbidden from fighting in any match inside the Gold Wall."
"That's also true of Minotaurs, I believe."
"Regardless, your servant Belle of Tarsus failed to participate in this tournament. She broke a contract. She is therefore permanently banished from the Kingdom of Torukai. As you are her employer, you are also responsible for this breach, and are therefore also banished."
"Are you sure you want to banish a white mage of Avalon?"
"But you're not here representing Avalon or the Order of Mist, are you?"
Lysnam asked with a smug grin.
"You made it quite explicit. You're here as an individual. White mages are still welcome. Only you specifically are banished."
"Well, that's convenient."
"You were the one who made it clear you'd come here on your own. Don't complain if I take you at your word."
Waldo shrugged. "It's fine. I wasn't planning to stay anyway. Though I am disappointed at not collecting the champion's purse or my winnings."
"Your Majesty," Alice called out, waving her arm. "Are you really going to let Lysnam do this? You know we didn't do anything wrong."
Mattis looked miserable and turned to Garibaldi, who hurriedly whispered to her. The Queen gave a despondent shake of her head.
"I'm very sorry, my dear, but I must agree with my guild's ruling."
"So much for honoring all bets," Valeria said from her couch.
Lysnam looked triumphant.
"I'm sure this is a terrible loss for you. Will you even be able to maintain the embassy now?"
"Oh, please, it's only gold. I'd say your losses are worse than mine. You've lost your champion and your reputation."
"We'll survive."
"As will I."
Valeria nodded to Nen.
"My servant would like to offer congratulations in person to Belle on her splendid performance. Would you object?"
He curled his lip.
"No, go right ahead."
"Actually," Waldo said, "Alice and I will go too. Since we've been banished, we should leave as quickly as possible. The sooner I have Belle back, the sooner we can go."
"Fine," Lysnam said. "Anything to be rid of you."
"After Nendara pays her respects," Valeria said to Waldo. "Do come see me before you quit the city. I believe I still owe you something."
"Really?" Waldo said in surprise. Valeria nodded.
"Well," Waldo thought, "maybe this hasn't been a complete waste after all."
Lysnam stood there and watched them go. He'd won. Despite all of Waldo's and Valeria's hidden machinations, he'd beaten them. Avalon had to be truly desperate to get their support for the war with Alteroth. He had never once imagined the white mages would go so far as to use great monsters and conspire with Drow. They were even more ruthless than he'd ever dreamed possible. He and the rest of the guild would have to be very wary of the white mages from this point forward. As for Valeria and her people, they would be driven out as soon as there was a new ruler on the throne. Come the spring, he would clean this city out and put things in proper order. He was just relieved the immediate danger was over.
Chapter 34. A 10-Minute Reward.
A pair of guards led the three of them to the holding area, where Belle was waiting. Waldo asked the guards to give them some privacy. With the tournament now over, they had no issue with that. and left the four of them alone in the large cell. Nunc. Waldo dispelled the illusions he'd cast on the two of them. Bell vanished and was Nen. Nen was replaced by Gronk.
Now there's my big man, Nen said, rubbing her hands together. You look so much better this way.
Well, I like being a pretty girl,
Gronk lisped and kept his distance from her.
Can you change me back now, Master?
Actually,
Nen strolled towards the ogre.
Could you give us, say, 20 minutes, Master Waldo?
Why? Waldo asked.
I just want a little private time with this big, strong man.
Nen licked her lips.
I don't think that would be a good idea,
Gronk said, backing away from her. Actually, Waldo said, he and I have been banished, and your mistress asked me to see her before I go. So we don't have time to waste.
10 minutes, then?
She pointed to the corner of the room where Varka's battle axe lay.
I even brought you a present. It's perfect for a mighty beast like him. And the exalted lady wouldn't be helping you now if it weren't for me. I'm sure you can give me just 10 minutes alone with your ogre as thanks.
Waldo rubbed his chin and considered.
Master, please don't leave me alone with her,
Gronk whimpered. I'm sorry, Gronk, but she has done a lot for me, and she's only asking for 10 minutes. Try to be brave. Waldo and Alice left. He gulped and kept backing up until he reached the wall.
You're a submissive, aren't you?
Nen asked, a purr in her voice.
I can tell.
I only like those kinds of things when Master does them.
Let's see if I can change that.
From behind her back, she pulled out a leather riding crop.
Now get on your hands and knees, and from now on, whenever we're alone, I want you to call me Snuggles.
Gronk gave a wail of despair, but still got down on all fours and allowed her to mount him. Waldo didn't know what happened in there during those 10 minutes. There were a lot of cracks and cries of pain, and Waldo could sense discomfort, shame, and pleasure through the bond. When the time was up, his ogre was on his feet and refusing to look him in the eye. For her part, Nen was sighing and staring up at Gronk.
I think I'm in love, she said.
Gronk burst into fresh tears. Waldo decided not to ask for details. He recast the illusion on Gronk, transforming him back into Bell. Go to the palace, get our things, then go to the docks and hire a boat. Pay whatever you have to, but get them to agree to leave the moment I arrive. I'm going with Nen to see Valeria.
Okay, darling. Please get to us as quick as you can.
I will, Waldo promised. Chapter 35. A Folded Map. This trip to the House of Black Glass went far smoother than the first. It helped not only that he'd visited before, but that he had Nen at his side. Nen personally escorted him to the domed chamber where Valeria was waiting. When the bronze doors were shut, he, Nen, the exalted lady, and 2 human servants were the only people present. Nen went to stand behind Valeria's chair. Waldo walked to the far end of the table and held out both hands, palms up.
Ukunibonga ukuba, ingihambise alangane nawe, oyin chusa elonifikile.
Honored am I to be granted this meeting, exalted lady. From a seated position, Valeria held both hands, palm up.
Be welcome in my home, Master Waldo.
She motioned to the chair on her immediate right.
Please be seated.
Thank you, Waldo said.
I take it you are pleased with today's results? You still have a whole skin, so obviously.
I'm very glad to hear that, especially given how much gold you lost.
It's only gold. I can always get more.
I believe that attitude to be unique to Drow.
True. I think you humans value gold more than the air you breathe. To Drow, it's just a pretty metal that is too soft for weapons or tools. If we didn't use it for trade, I doubt we'd mine it.
So, you're satisfied?
Ecstatic.
Valeria took a single grape from a bowl of fruit and slipped it into her mouth.
Varka is dead, and the guild has been damaged. That was all I was after.
I'm glad to hear it, though I wonder if it was worth all the trouble to just kill 1 minotaur.
Varka was more than a minotaur. He was the guild's champion, a symbol of their power. Killing him weakened them, and reminded Lysnam and his bunch they are not untouchable. Forcing them to disqualify the tournament champion will also damage their reputation. Anything that hurts the guild pleases me. Waldo nodded. I'm sure you will eventually get your own gaming and pleasure houses. Valeria smiled at him, an amused little smile. Do you think I care about that? Lysnum thinks you do. He believes you're trying to take over all of his guild's operations. Yes, so I can make more gold. She rolled her eyes and took another grape from the bowl. If you don't care about gold or the businesses, then why attack the guild? To gain greater influence with the queen. So long as she listens to those fools, she will never give me what I truly want. She ate the grape. What would that be? Everything. Waldo was not surprised. People don't usually give up everything, at least not so long as they have a choice. I know. Well, I wish you good fortune in reaching your goal. Valeria chuckled. You are a very unusual white mage. So I keep being told. You know, I wouldn't mind working with you again some day. Waldo bowed his head. I feel the same way, exalted lady. Valeria took out a folded-up piece of paper and slid it across the table to him. What I promised you. Waldo immediately unfolded it to get a look. He was surprised to see it was not a local map of one specific country. Rather, it depicted a vast section of the Shattered Lands. Individual countries were not displayed. Instead, the map showed a few specific cities and roads. It detailed coastlines and rivers, forests, mountain ranges, wide plains, and swamplands. Waldo noted that a depressing number of places had the warning, "Here be monster," written here. And near the very edge of the map were mountains and a city with a drawing of a miniature dragon. Torikai was also denoted. It was near the opposite end of the map. There was no scale to relate inches on the map to miles in the real world, but there was obviously a lot of distance between the two. It's very far away, Waldo noted. I was hoping it would be a bit closer. Dragon lairs are hard to find, Master Waldo. This is the only one I know of. I see. He studied the map. The name of the city near the lair is rather foreboding. I find it fitting, all things considered. This is the thing you wanted, is it not? Waldo nodded. Then I suppose our business is concluded. The bronze doors opened almost immediately, pushed open by a pair of drow warriors. Waldo hurriedly refolded the map and very carefully slid it into one of the many pockets of his robe. He then stood, and once more gave her the drow greeting. You have my thanks, exalted lady. May all your foes know despair and death at your hands. She did not get up, but she did hold her palms out. May you find whatever it is you seek, Master Waldo. Waldo turned to go. He wanted to be on that ship and on his way as soon as possible. His time in Torigai had been largely frustrating. He'd lost Kleptus, a lot of gold, been forced to endure the presence of Melissa and the humiliations she inflicted on him, and he'd failed to acquire even one additional spell, despite being in a city with a guild library. But his time here had still been worth it. He'd gotten the one absolutely vital piece of information he'd needed. He now knew where to search for a dragon, and hopefully a dragon's egg. He had a very long journey ahead of him. Waldo was almost to the doors when Valeria caught him by surprise and spoke to him again. Oh, Master Waldo, one last thing before you go. Waldo stopped and very cautiously half-turned back to Valeria while keeping the two armed drow by the doors in sight. He hadn't expected Valeria to have anything more to say to him. Drow surprises could be very bad things. Yes? That saying about trust being a dagger. Where did you hear it? He forced an indifferent expression onto his face and gave an apathetic wave of his hand. Oh, everywhere. It's a very common saying all through these lands. Is it? I've met many different lords and merchants from many nations, but I've only heard that saying once before. It was from a mage from a very large country south of here. Like you, he wore robes that were just one color. Not white, though. Really? That is, very interesting. She picked out another grape with great care,
forcing him to stand there and wait. She examined it for a moment, like a jeweler in search of flaws in a gem.
"You truly are nothing like any other white mage I've ever heard of. You use great monster familiars, you gamble, you attend blood sports, you have a wife who is a monster, and you made a deal with me. Do you know, I would almost think you weren't a white mage at all, but someone impersonating one. In fact, I would think you act and sound like a dark mage."
Waldo laughed.
"That's funny. Me? A dark mage? That's ridiculous."
Even to his own ears, his laughter sounded forced.
"Of course it is."
She popped the grape into her mouth and made a show of chewing and finally swallowing it.
"It's a silly notion. Well, don't let me keep you any longer. Safe journeys, Master Waldo."
"Thank you." Waldo hurried out, walking as fast as he could without breaking into an actual run. Once Waldo was gone, Nen spoke.
"He is one, isn't he?"
Valeria nodded.
"Yes, he must be."
"Then why didn't Melissa expose or execute him?"
Valeria raised an eyebrow.
"Isn't it obvious? He has a succubus as a completely devoted and subservient wife. He must be an absolute beast in bed. No doubt he has serviced Melissa like a bull and made her his obedient woman."
Nen thought about it and then nodded.
"That does seem the only possible answer."
The horrible ball of fire had left the sky, and it was night, as Waldo exited the House of Black Glass. The streets of Torikai were still well lit thanks to the magics of the guild. He could see there were crowds milling near the arena. They would be enjoying the feast in the plaza, especially if they had bet on Varka. Waldo went down one of the side streets that would lead him to the Gold Gate, without having to navigate a mass of people. He was relieved to have survived his bargain with Valeria and made it out alive. The fact she had guessed the truth about him was worrying, and one more reason to get to the docks as quickly as possible. As he headed down the street, he sensed an invisible person coming towards him. Waldo didn't give him a second thought. As they passed, the man struck him in the back of his head. There was sudden pain, and surprise, and then blackness. Chapter 36. An Angry Mob. Lieutenant Stolheim was happy. Captain Metzinger had decided to enjoy the Queen's feast and had left him in charge of the main gate. It was his first command. Until the sun rose, he was in charge of the 20 guards manning the Gold Gate. Most of the men assigned to him were unhappy. They wanted to be at the feast. That was too bad. Duty came first. The lieutenant intended to do a superb job, so the captain would be nothing but pleased by his performance. The third company had 6 lieutenants assigned to it. Quite a lot for just 100 men. Like all the other officers in the guard, Stolheim was of noble birth, the third son of a baron. His oldest brother would inherit the family estate and their father's title. His second older brother had gotten a commission in the army, and so he had wound up an officer in the Gold Guard. It was not too difficult a life. He was provided a large apartment within the wall at no cost, and a generous stipend to cover his monthly expenses. On top of that, he received 2 gold marks a month in salary. It was enough to allow him to keep pretty little Sarella as a serving girl and bed warmer, and to allow him to socialize regularly with the other officers and noblemen who lived here. He had to lead patrols through the city, deal with thieves and other troublemakers, but the work was not that hard. And having so many officers did mean they could share the burdens. He also was not forced to waste time with training. Like all the officers when he was not actually on duty, he tried to spend as little time with the men as possible. His free time was better spent at the taverns and the pleasure houses, among his own kind. Yes, life as an officer within the guard was pleasant. The only frustrating aspect to it was the difficulty with promotion. Captains got 3 gold marks a month and often got assignments inside the palace itself. Just the thought of getting to work near his beautiful queen made his heart skip a beat. But captains almost never retired. They liked to stay at their posts as long as they could. When a position did open up, it would be to the person with the best connections or the fattest purse. He knew his odds of ever becoming a captain were slim, but that made him all the more determined to perform well and make sure Captain Metzinger was satisfied with him. Stolheim had polished his boots and armor until they shined, and gotten the fluffiest white feather at the top of his helmet. Anyone would be able to tell with just a look that he was a fine officer. He was thinking about buying some white gloves when one of his men came up to him.
"Lieutenant, there's a crowd coming."
"A crowd? What do you mean?"
The fool shook his shoulders.
"I mean a crowd. Lots and lots of people are coming up the road."
Frowning, Lieutenant Stolheim exited the command post and walked out to stand just behind the open gate. Sure enough, he could see a mass of people walking towards the gate. Some of them were carrying torches. He could clearly see they were commoners.
"What are these fools doing? Are they drunk? Do they think they'll be allowed at the feast?"
His men were looking at one another nervously.
Lieutenant, should we shut the gate?"
Lieutenant Stolheim turned an incredulous face to the idiot.
"Don't be stupid. The gates never close, you know that. It would take the Queen's order."
The guard stared back dumbly.
"Then, are we supposed to let all of them pass through?"
"Of course not. They're probably all just drunk, and think the Queen will let them go begging inside the wall just because it's her birthday. The commoners never understand there are limits to the Queen's generosity. People should know their place and be grateful for what they're given."
Stolheim strode forward to let them get a good look at him. He was an impressive figure. You had to be firm with the rats. They were all lazy and thieving scum, who never wanted to work and expected everything to be handed to them. He took 10 steps and then halted in the middle of the gold road. He held out one hand, signaling them to stop.
"What do you people think you are doing? The tournament is already over. You are not permitted to enter the inner city. Stop and return to your homes."
Stolheim expected to be obeyed. After all, he was an officer in the guard. So far as the rats were concerned, his word was law. But they didn't stop. The crowd picked up its pace.
"I said stop! Go back to your homes now! I command you in the name of the Queen!"
"Fuck the Queen!"
someone in the crowd shouted, followed instantly by cheers. Stolheim was stunned. Those words were treason. And these fools cheered? It was at that moment the lieutenant really noticed just how many people were coming towards him, and how close they were getting. He began to take a couple steps back, while still facing the crowd. He wasn't sure what to do. As if seeing this tepid retreat as a signal, a man at the very front suddenly pulled out a sword from beneath his cloak.
"For the rabbit!"
he shouted, and broke into a run. Others brought out swords. Many more waved clubs and knives in their hands. They all surged after their leader, howling at the top of their lungs. Stolheim turned around and ran.
"Shut the gate! Shut the gate!"
A few of his men ignored him and simply ran away. Most of them obeyed. Half ran to the door to the right, and half to the door on the left. They had never bothered to practice closing the gate, and the doors were heavy, and their hinges had been allowed to rust. As the men pushed, the gate began to close, but not quickly. Stolheim ran past the threshold and stopped.
"Hurry up and close it, you idiots!"
He stood there and yelled at them. It did not occur to him to either raise the alarm or physically help. The crowd had almost reached the gate before he realized it, and it would not be shut in time. He pulled out his sword, took a step forward, then took a step back, and finally turned around to run. It was too late. The crowd poured through. The men with swords did not hesitate and attacked the guards, cutting them down without even a fight. Lieutenant Stolheim made it about 30 feet before he could feel the cold steel driven into his back. As he lay in the street dying, the last thing he heard was a man shouting,
"Take everything! Take everything!"
Darren struck down the cowardly officer who tried to abandon his men. He turned around to see the people pouring through the gate. The guards who tried to close it had been swarmed under, their heads bashed in with clubs or stabbed to death by dozens of knives.
"Take everything!" Darren yelled. "Take everything! Take back everything they've ever taken from us!"
The mob hardly needed his words. They smashed in the windows and doors of every shop and house. The people inside were dragged out and beaten. The prettier the clothes they had on, the more savagely they were punched and kicked. Some of the men and women who were pulled out of the buildings begged for mercy and asked what they'd done. Darren was sure that what was happening had to seem like a crime to them, and he had no doubt that some, maybe most of these people were relatively innocent. But he was also sure that they would have been happy to live in splendor on this side of the wall without ever lifting a finger to help all those who had nothing. They were not part of the herd. They had not accepted the love of the great rabbit. They cared only about their own selfish ways. He wouldn't waste any of his pity on them. People poured into the houses and shops. They came out with arms full of anything they could carry. Sacks of flour, rolls of cured meat, bottles of wine, silverware, fine dishes, pots, pans, beautiful clothing, blankets, drapes, books, pieces of furniture, paintings, and even rolled-up carpets. This wasn't theft, though. This is what the merchants like to call fair compensation. If a worker on a caravan lost or accidentally broke anything, the merchant would take the cost of it out of what they would be paid. If the merchandise was worth more than their payment, it was the merchant's right to get the value any way they could. Darren had seen girls forced to work in the pleasure houses and men forced into the fighting pits, just to make sure a merchant's purse wasn't light. Well, the queen had stolen from his people, and this was only fair compensation. When one of the shops was emptied out, a man with a torch went up to it and gleefully set it on fire as folks cheered. Darren hadn't said anything about burning down the inner city. That wouldn't help to feed the poor. He didn't try to stop it, though. The people who lived here were of the wolves and the foxes. If they suffered, it wasn't his concern. As each building was emptied out, it was set ablaze to cheers. The fires would definitely catch and spread. Hebron came up to him, with his sword in one hand and a sack full of tobacco in the other.
"This is amazing. Who would have ever thought we could do this?"
"It's because the great rabbit is watching over and blessing us. All of this is his will," Darren said.
"What do we do now?"
"We keep going. There's still more to take." Darren, Hebron, and the fighters from his guild led, and the throng followed behind, looting, robbing, and burning as they went. A few times they'd run into a patrol of guards. The patrol would take one look at the size of the crowd and flee. They eventually reached the great plaza, where the arena, mage guild, and main gaming houses all were. Darren was amazed to see there were still people sitting at the tables, eating and laughing. There were musicians, singers, acrobats, jugglers, and painted whores, all to entertain the people feasting. This was the same feast he and the poor who'd been allowed to attend the tournament had been turned away from. Hundreds of yards away, he could smell the sweet aroma of meat cooked over open fires. Fat, rich, gluttonous men and women were drinking and feasting even as the city was burning around them. Somehow Darren didn't find that surprising at all. Without speaking a word, some of the crowd charged towards the tables, and some went to the gaming house. The revelers and performers only noticed them when the mob let out a howl. The performers were the smart ones. They had no idea what was going on, but they ran away as fast as their legs would carry them. Most of the fat fools wearing satin and velvets remained in their seats and simply watched. Perhaps they were too drunk to see the danger, or maybe they assumed the crowd was there to entertain them somehow. After all, when the poor came to this place, it was always to serve the rich. Many of them were still sitting there as they got their skulls smashed in, or knives driven into their throats. Nothing drove hungry people to greater fury than seeing tables piled high with food and drink, and knowing they weren't permitted a single bite. The crowd murdered the feasters, robbed them, and began to stuff their faces. The gaming house was a bit different. It was still open, and the guards protecting it were competent. The moment they spotted his people spilling into the plaza, they shut and barred the heavy iron doors. The gaming houses all had vaults with fortunes in gold and silver stored within. They were built like fortresses with a single entrance, heavy doors, and thick stone walls. Hundreds of men slammed up against the door and tried to force it open, but it didn't budge. Men in the mob began to cry out as crossbow bolts began to pepper them. From inside, the guards were shooting at them through slits in the second-story wall. It figured the queen would make sure her wealth was well protected. Darren doubted the place would be overrun any time soon, but they would get the money inside if they had to tear the place apart stone by stone.
"In the name of the queen, stop this madness!" an ungodly voice boomed out.
From the north side of the plaza, men in brightly colored robes or golden armor came running. Their numbers were far greater than a common patrol. Darren waved his sword above his head.
"Rally to me! Rally to me!"
The people trying to storm the gaming house and those among the feasting tables hurried back towards the middle of the plaza, where Darren and his fellow fighters were. The guards formed up directly in front of the guild hall. They formed a ragged line with 20 men across, their formation was 10 deep. Gold guards, all in armor, and with their swords drawn. Spread out in front of the guards were 12 mages. Their lines were not perfect, but the guards at least had some discipline and were in formation. Darren was surrounded by a seething mob. He had no idea exactly how many people were with him, but they easily outnumbered the guards by at least 20 to 1, perhaps by as much as 30 or 40 to 1. But only about 30 of his people were armed with swords, and only he and his guildmates really knew how to use them. No one on his side had armor, and of course, they had no magic. The mages cast spells, and suddenly a dozen giants towered above the plaza. The forms of the mages seemed to be looking down on them. Darren had seen this magic before, in the arena, just today. He understood that these giants were not real, they were a trick. But the people of the Rat's Nest had been taught to fear magic and hold it in awe. The mages of the guild were like small gods walking the earth. The sight of 12 of them, standing 20 feet tall, sent a shiver of fear through the crowd. They began to pull back, like a tide receding from the shore.
"It's a trick!" Darren yelled. "What you see isn't real. It's a lie like everything else about this place."
One of the images took a step forward and scowled down upon the multitude. Darren didn't know his name, but he knew he was the same one who disqualified Bell at the tournament.
"All of you are guilty of murder, theft, arson, and high treason. The punishment for your crimes is death. Only out of the Queen's great mercy, I will spare most of your wretched lives. All I require is that you hand over your leaders to me and leave the inner city at once. Do this, and the rest of you will be spared. Refuse, and you will all die here and now."
Faces turned to Darren and Hebron, faces that were frightened and confused.
"Don't listen to him. He's the Queen's little dog," Darren yelled.
The giant image pointed down directly to where Darren stood.
"Is he your leader? Bring him to me. Now."
The crowd looked at Darren, then up at the giants. They began to inch closer.
"Think of what we've done here tonight,"
Darren shouted, holding his sword ready. He had no intention of giving up.
"Do you really want nothing to change? Do you want the Queen to go on using you and letting you suffer? If you want change, you have to fight for it. If you would save the herd, you have to fight the wolves."
They listened. They hesitated. Their eyes turned back up.
"What are you fools doing?" the giant demanded. "Do you all want to die tonight? Give him to me, or—"
Then from the crowd, one voice yelled out as clear as day,
"For the rabbit!"
A stone flew.
"For the rabbit!"
someone else shouted.
"For the rabbit!"
Another stone flew.
"Fuck the Queen!"
another.
"For the rabbit!"
another.
"Fuck the Queen and all our fucking wizards, too!"
another. Hundreds of rocks began to fly through the air towards the enemy. The guards had armor and metal helmets, but no shields. They covered their faces to protect themselves. The mages instinctively ducked and tried to cover themselves. As they did so, their images did the same. The terrifying impression of 12 all-powerful wizards towering above them was ruined as they seemed to scrunch up and flinch. Their leader, the one in red and gold who'd pointed out Darren and demanded he be given up, refused to cower and remained standing straight. One of the rocks caught him in the temple. He fell over and hit the ground in a lump. The instant he did so, his image vanished.
"You see?" Darren shouted. "It's all just a trick! For the rabbit!"
Waving his sword, he charged forward. With a wild cheer, the throng stampeded right behind him. And in that moment, Darren witnessed the mages revealing their true selves. They all tried to run. Not one of them stood his ground and tried to fight back with magic. Some of them tried to push through the lines of guards in order to get away. Seeing the mages abandon them, the guards immediately lost heart and turned tail to run as well. The battle was over before it even properly began. Some of the guards escaped the plaza with their lives. None of the mages did. Darren had the very great pleasure of hacking one of the cowards to bloody pieces. It offended him that these craven worms had the same titles as the noble and heroic Waldo and Melissa. Darren was splattered in blood, the butchered corpse at his feet. He looked about at the slaughter, at all the bodies lying on the paving stones. Many more men were holding new swords in their hands. With this, all of the inner city was theirs. Darren went up to one of his people, who was carrying a torch. "Give me that." The man immediately obeyed, and Darren took the torch in his free hand and climbed the steps to the guild hall. The entrance was open. With great satisfaction, he tossed him the torch. He stood there and watched the carpets catch and spread to the wooden furnishings that had been varnished. They caught immediately and drank in the flames.
"Hey, why'd you do that?" one of his people asked. "We didn't even start to rob the place yet."
"It is the will of the god," Darren said with total certainty. "The mages were the worst of all the queen's lackeys. Nothing of theirs should survive. Let it all burn." Darren was also sure Master Waldo would be most pleased about this. The guild had disrespected the master. What better punishment could there be than for all of them to die and for their precious hall and library to burn to ash?
"Come on, there's plenty more to do."
Chapter 37. I Am Saving You. Waldo slowly came awake. The very first thing he noted was a throbbing from the back of his head. The second thing he noticed was the fact his hands and feet were tied.
"Good, you're finally awake. I was beginning to worry."
He recognized the voice.
"Melissa? I need your help. Someone robbed me."
Waldo opened his eyes and carefully sat up. Even that little bit of movement made his head hurt. He needed to heal himself. It took a moment for his eyes to focus. When they did, he saw he was in an alleyway somewhere near the wall. He thought he heard shouting in the distance, and there seemed to be a whiff of smoke in the air. His arms and legs were tightly bound. He could do no more than sit up.
"She knows all about that," Kleptus said.
The thief was leaning against one of the alley walls, without a care in the world. Melissa was gripping a wand in both hands and staring down at him.
"I see. If you wanted to talk again, you could have just asked."
"I suppose you think you're very clever," Melissa said, frowning.
"Not at the moment. The potion finally wore off, didn't it?" Melissa surprised him by shaking her head.
"No, it seems it really is permanent. I'm still in love with you."
"You have a really, really strange way of showing it."
He paused as a thought occurred to him.
"Oh, wait. Are you wanting to play Slave Master and the Innocent Slave Boy? Because if you are, I don't think I'm going to be able to perform very well tied up like this. In this sort of roleplay, the ropes are supposed to be more decorative than binding."
"Will you stop with your ridiculous jokes and take this seriously?"
"Actually, he's being completely serious," Kleptus said with a smirk. "He and his little succubus play those sorts of games all the time."
"Disgusting."
Waldo sucked in a breath and glared at the thief. Kleptus smiled back.
"Yes," Melissa growled. "He's told me about all your filthy secrets. I know what Alice really is. Do you understand how repulsive you are, Waldo? To have lain with a monster is the absolute height of depravity. It's bestiality. The things you did with that creature are unnatural, grotesque and repulsive." "You're a virgin, aren't you?"
Her hand lashed out and slapped him hard across the face, knocking him from a seated position to flat on his side.
"Enough with the jokes. Take this seriously."
"As you wish."
With his hands bound, the only spell he could work was levitation, but he could still summon his familiars. He knew Melissa was dangerous, but he didn't have a choice.
"Concalo."
Nothing happened. Both Alice and Gronk should have instantly appeared.
"Your pets can't interfere."
Melissa pointed a single finger at the ground.
"Look where you are."
Waldo hadn't noticed it, but now that she pointed it out, he realized they were both standing inside a large circle. There were runes on the outside of it, which were for blocking summoning magic.
"Well, that's unfortunate."
He sat back up. It was awkward, as the ropes were tight and really limited how much he could move.
"So what happens now? You kill me? Do you honestly believe I would go through this much trouble just to kill you?"
"Maybe. Who can tell with a white mage? Your sword isn't known for being rational."
"So you're really not one yourself?"
Kleptus cut in.
"When the lady here told me, I wasn't sure it was true. I figured it had to be personal between you two. She hates you way too much for it to just be her job."
"My reasons don't concern you, thief," Melissa said.
"She's in love with me," Waldo said matter-of-factly.
Kleptus gave an understanding nod.
That explains it, then.
Tell me something. Is she paying you, or did you betray me out of spite?
Me? Betray you?
Kleptus looked and sounded genuinely offended.
You let them do this to me?
He waved his stump about. Despite the robes, Waldo managed to shrug.
I told you what would happen if you were caught. You still could have saved me.
Why? A thief who gets himself caught isn't worth having. I bet you don't feel that way now. Melissa offered me 20 gold guilders to betray you. Plus, she's going to remove your seal and set me free.
Remove it?
Waldo glanced at Melissa.
You haven't told him?
No, why would I?
Fair point.
Kleptus's head swiveled between the two of them.
Told me what?
The seal I carved into your chest is fake. There's nothing magical about it.
What?
Kleptus spat.
So I've been your slave all this time for no reason?
You got to do a lot of traveling and have an adventure. For a slave, I'd say you received excellent treatment.
I'd like to cut your throat.
So? My grandfather wants to eat my heart. Get in line. Kleptus glared at Melissa.
Why didn't you tell me?
Would you have helped me if I had?
Hells yes! To get even with this prick and for the gold?
He spat.
I've had my fill of you white mages, real and pretend. Give me my gold and I'll be on my way.
Melissa pointed her wand at him.
For your help you have my thanks, thief.
Kleptus put his hands up.
Whoa! Wait a minute, I don't need... Ventus estorana.
A ferocious wind whipped up at his feet and whirled him about like a leaf. Melissa lifted her wand above her head and Kleptus flew. His arms and legs flailed as he went up into the sky. His terrified scream rose and faded as Waldo lost sight of him.
Why did you do that? Waldo asked.
What else would I do with him? Her wand was still in hand, but she was not pointing it at him.
He was a thief. Thieves should be killed.
Even the ones who help you?
He was a thief, she repeated. The fewer thieves in this world, the better. Besides, he would have told stories about you. There are too many of those already.
You made a bargain with him. Both her eyebrows leapt up her forehead.
Are you condemning me for lying and breaking an agreement with a criminal? You tricked him into being your servant and used him to steal for you. And you question my actions?
Well, I'm not a white mage. Waldo glanced down at his robes.
Well, not a real one. Aren't you supposed to be honorable and all that? I am honorable. 1,000 times more honorable than you. My honor comes from serving my order in whatever manner is necessary. Any crime can be forgiven if it serves a higher purpose.
Well, that's convenient. Waldo gave her a respectful nod. You would make a great dark mage. He saw her entire body go rigid. She gripped her wand so tight, her knuckles went white.
Are you wanting me to kill you? Or do you simply enjoy insulting me so much you don't care about the consequences?
I meant it as a compliment.
Who would take that as a compliment?
Waldo sighed.
Never mind.
Melissa slowly shook her head.
You are a thief, a murderer, a corrupter, a plunderer, a liar, a deceiver, a cult leader, a false prophet, a slaver, a fornicator of beasts, and a pretender to my order. You bring ruin to every place you visit, like some living, breathing plague. You have earned death 100, 1,000 times over. You are, without the slightest doubt, the most evil and wicked man I've ever known.
Thank you. Melissa stopped and stared at him, disbelief painted on her features.
Why do you mock me? Is it such wonderful sport?
He sighed again. This was not going well.
I was being polite. Whenever someone compliments me, I always thank them for it. Is everything a game for you?
She sounded frustrated.
Believe me, Melissa, I don't find any of this to be funny. How did this happen to you?
Why are you asking me? You're the one who had me dragged here and tied up.
I mean, how could you be so monstrous? You have the same blood I do. Your eyes mark you as a child of Avalon, regardless of your birthplace. You are a mage with great strength. You are a healer. You possess the rarest and most blessed form of magic there is. By all rights, you should be one of the leaders of the Order of Mist. Instead, you commit the worst crimes possible, and do so wearing white robes.
Your very existence is an affront to everything I hold dear. Yet despite all that, I don't want to hurt you. I want to save you.
Is that why you brought me here?
Yes.
Waldo licked his lips and considered his words very carefully. Maybe he could talk his way out of this. Melissa was obviously confused, if not completely insane. If he could just make her understand reality, he might convince her to let him go.
Well, I appreciate that, I really do. But I don't want to be saved.
I know, but what you want doesn't matter. For all your sins and crimes, you are blessed, Waldo. The one we must follow has sent me to you. For surely all this was his divine will. You are lost, but will be brought back into the light. Rejoice!
She stepped toward him. There was a strange look in her eye. It reminded Waldo of someone who had taken too much wolfsbane. He tried to inch back from her.
Thank you, but I really don't think your God will get much use from me.
She stood over him. With her right hand, she suddenly grabbed a fistful of his hair and forced his face up towards hers. Her other hand gripped his chin. He was scared.
What are you doing?
Saving you.
She began to speak words of magic, which he heard as the human tongue.
Until the hour of my death, I bind you to me.
And he knew. He knew exactly what she was doing.
No!
He twisted and yanked his head away as hard as he could. He thought she might rip out his hair, but she wouldn't let go no matter how hard he fought. He tried to stand, to kick, to bite, anything to get away from her. But she wouldn't let go, and the ropes made it impossible for him to do more than jerk about. Melissa ignored his struggles and continued the enchantment.
Our souls are joined together, and your life shall end with mine. You shall never be hidden from my sight, nor speak an untruth to me, for we are one to the death. This is our contract.
She kissed him. Waldo felt a flush of heat rush through his body. It was done. The death seal was complete. Chapter 38. The Will of the Rabbit. Alice was pacing the deck of the ship. It was a simple barge with a simple mast and sail, and a crew of only 5. The crewmen were all huddled together and whispering. Their captain had been more than happy to take her silver, but that was before they had heard the screams and the sounds of fighting, before they noticed the large fire and the smoke beginning to rise over the city. Whatever was happening inside the wall, where Waldo was.
That's it. I'm going to find him.
The master said for us to wait here, not go back.
Bell was leaning against the wooden rail, causing the ship to list about 10 degrees.
How can you be so calm?
Alice rounded on her.
You felt it too. He was terrified. The last time I felt him that scared was when he was fighting his grandfather.
The drow is scary. It's not a surprise he was afraid. Maybe Nen wanted to spend some time alone with him.
Bell closed her eyes and shuddered.
But he's not afraid now, though.
No, she admitted. But I don't like what he's feeling now, either.
He feels...
She chewed her lip, and thought about the best word to describe it.
Defeated.
Bell nodded.
Maybe the drow broke the deal. That's probably what happened.
Then why did he feel excited before?
High expectations? Look, sweetie, you're overthinking this. The master can summon us if he really needs us. He made it clear he wants us to stay here and wait for him.
She glanced at the crew and lowered her voice.
What do you plan to do? Fly in and scoop him up? What if someone spots you, and you get blasted with a bolt of lightning or something? I sort of get the feeling those mages don't like us much.
Well, since they tried to kill you before everything happened today, I can't really argue with that. But he's not moving. Why is he still in one place? And what is happening up there? It sounds like a war.
Birthday parties can get out of hand sometimes. Look, sweetie, if he's in trouble, he'll summon us. Until then, let's wait here like he said.
Alice sighed. What Belle said made sense, but she couldn't shake the feeling that something very bad was going on.
Fine. I'll wait for now. But if he feels afraid again or he doesn't start moving soon, I'm going.
The captain approached her.
"Excuse me, miss. Just how long is it going to be before we can go?"
"I don't know.
The lads are getting a bit nervous. Troubles in a city have a way of spreading fast. I think we all feel better if we cast off."
"We already paid you 10 silver coins, and you agreed to leave when we told you."
"I did, but it's never a good thing to be close to men fighting."
She took a deep breath and looked into the captain's eyes.
"Please be patient, and ask your men to do the same."
A blank expression filled his features, and his mouth opened and closed wordlessly.
"Yes, I'll do that."
He wandered back to his crew. She didn't like charming people, but there were times when it was necessary. Alice began to pace again, and hoped she would soon sense Waldo approaching. He was lying on his side, panting. He felt exhausted and unbearably hot, as though he'd just run 10 miles. There was a stinging pain in his chest, above his heart, and a buzzing in the back of his head. From somewhere, he could hear people shouting. Melissa was kneeling beside him. He could feel her fingers running through his hair.
"Don't worry. The effects will pass soon," Melissa said as she continued to touch him. "You'll recover your strength and we'll be able to set out. You'll love Avalon, I promise. It's the most beautiful country in the world."
"Liar," Waldo thought. "I'm from the most wondrous and majestic city in all the Shattered Lands. What could your miserable little island have that even begins to compare to the Forge, or the Hall, or the 7 castles of the Great Houses?" Her hand finally left his hair and began to play with his ear and cheek.
"You're angry with me, aren't you? I can understand, but it's for your own good. Now your new life can begin. You can leave your past behind and start over clean. Once you've been re-educated, you can be inducted into the Order of Mist. With your natural strength and talent in healing, you'll rise through the ranks quickly. We'll be married, of course, and we'll have at least 12 beautiful children, all strong with magic. I'll make you happy, my beloved. You've been truly blessed."
He turned his face up to look at her.
"Fuck you," he said between pants.
Melissa didn't get upset with him. She continued to gently touch his face.
"You can be angry with me. It's fine. I'm sure in time you'll come to appreciate what I've done for you. You belong to me now, Waldo. Until death do we part."
Waldo wondered if the sounds he was hearing were the dark powers laughing at him. Perhaps Alice had been right about them being jealous gods. If this was his punishment for telling a few stories, it seemed awfully disproportionate to his crime. Couldn't they have just given him leprosy or covered him in boils? And just as he was certain the dark powers were treating him the way a dog in heat treats a person's leg, he was shown they had a sense of humor. The shouts he'd heard grew louder and closer. Some people ran past the mouth of the alley, others chased after them. One of these spotted him and Melissa and called out. Dozens of men poured into the alley from both sides. All of them wore work clothes. A few carried swords, with others carrying torches, clubs, or daggers. Not one of them wore armor or carried a shield. When this mob arrived, Melissa got to her feet with her wand at the ready. Waldo remained bound on the ground. The mob did not attack them, but seemed very angry. Melissa stood protectively over him, with her face darting to either side. They were packed in and within arm's length. Waldo noted they had stepped all over the lines and runes of the circle Melissa had drawn. It was a moment of sudden and utter charity. One man pushed his way to the front of the unruly horde. He had a bloodied sword in his right hand, and his shirt and face were stained red.
"Master Rabbit, Mistress Cornwall, what happened?" Darren asked.
He pointed at Waldo.
"Cut the master free!"
2 men with knives hurriedly sliced the ropes and helped Waldo to his feet. His legs didn't want to hold him up, and he was forced to lean on one of them to stand.
"The mages did this, didn't they?" Darren seethed. "It wasn't enough for them to steal your woman's victory and take everything. They had to attack you, too."
He nodded to Melissa.
"You must have rescued him, mistress. I'm very glad you're both safe."
Melissa hesitated.
"Yes, that's exactly what happened."
"Well, you don't need to worry. We've already killed a bunch of them, and the guards. We're taking back everything they've stolen from us. For they be not of the herd, and will not have the rabbit's love."
He lifted his sword over his head and gave a shout.
"For the rabbit!"
All the men gave a loud cheer in response. Waldo stood there and looked around. Besides the people in the alleyway, there were many more in the